Everyone, and welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation Economic Development, and it's Thursday, March 27, 2003, and boy, is this going fast. At this time, I'm going to open as a subcommittee of the subcommittee for the agency overview, and we're going to begin, first of all, with the response to subcommittee questions. This is miraculous.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Mike Marsh from ODOT. You should have before you a series of answers to questions that occurred on the 24th and 25th. Just wanted to briefly go through those and see if there are any follow-up at this time, then we'll go to the completion of the Public Transit Division. The first item is on the blue sheet, which is for March 24th, indicating a question that related to the total amount of funds sent to transit districts by the federal government. As indicated on the second paragraph there, the total amount coming through Congress is a little over $7 billion. Of that amount, $126 million goes to Oregon entities. So we go from the $7 billion to $126 million for Oregon. Within that total, $118.2 million goes directly to 11 entities within Oregon. So it does not go through ODOT. It goes directly to the entities. Four grants go through the governor because he's the technical recipient, but there's not an oversight function there. It's a part of the process of how the federal government distributes that portion of the money. So that's $2.6 million. The final $5.7 million goes through the Public Transit Division budget and through ODOT on its way to Oregon communities. So that's the amount that comes through our budget that you see and that we'll discuss. Mr. Chair, if there aren't any questions on that one, I'll go to the white sheet, which is March 25th. The first question there was relating to the safety division, five regional safety officers, and what are the total costs associated with those. The total costs are approximately $686,000. The process in the past of establishing those positions were that in Region 1 and Region 3, which is Region 1 is the Portland area, Region 3 is headquartered in Roseburg and is southwest Oregon. It was established in the 97-99 biennium. Regions 2, 3, and 5 coordinators were added in November 1998 emergency board and then were approved as part of the 2001-2003 Ways and Means process. The bottom line to the discussion is that by having these coordinators there around the state, it's more efficient and economical in terms of economy of scale of them coordinating for a region rather than having a very small amount of money going to individual cities and counties and not having it really account for much, whereas when you have a coordinator and have the cities and counties look to them, it has worked pretty well. We're open to more questions as we get further into work session on that. The second question related to the status of the transit federal compliance audit report. There was a mention in the presentation on the 25th of the audit not being complete yet. It has been complete now, and I wanted to report that the federal compliance report that was being spoken to there indicates that corrective, as indicated in the last paragraph of that answer, corrective action was taken. The department established a formal sub-recipient monitoring plan that provides reasonable assurance of compliance with federal requirements. There's a question about what has happened. Is this audit complete or not? It has been. Corrective action has been taken. The last question in this series from the 25th relates to issues about perceived discrepancies in the transit budget between the presentation by Budget Management Division of Department of Administrative Services, the Legislative Fiscal Office, and the summary report presented by Martin in the Public Transit Division budget. Wanted to indicate, first of all, sorry about the complexity of a spreadsheet on this page. We'll try to walk through it very simply, if possible, here. The first point is that this is a snapshot in time situation in terms of the budget, and it's not a disagreement in terms of the situation. It's simply analyses that were done at different points in the process. To start with the first paragraph under the spreadsheet on the page, it indicates that the columns that are up above that are labeled columns 1 and 5 were the ones that were in the DAS handout. So columns 1 and 5 were in the DAS handout. They accurately state the Transit Division legislatively adopted budget at the close of the session, 2001 session, which is column 1, and the legislatively adopted budget as changed by the special sessions 1 through 5, which is in column 5. So column 1 is the budget at the end of the session. Column 5 is the budget after all the special sessions. Moving on then, columns 2, 3, and 4 show the cuts and additions to the transit budget in special sessions 2, 3, and 5. So it's showing the addition of each one of those with 2 showing the number 2, column 3 showing the third special session, column 4 showing the fifth special session where the changes were made. Column 6 is page 55 of ODOT's presentation document. And column 6 reflects the division's estimate in April of 2002 for how much the legislatively adopted budget expenditure limitation would actually be expended on June 30th of 2003. So it's showing the effect and the estimate in 2002 or April of 2002 of what would be expended at the end of the biennium. Moving then to general funds and other funds for column 6, those are derived by adding the numbers in columns 1 and 2. So it's pretty clear that columns 1 and 2 would be what existed by April of 2002 because the special session occurred in February and the end of the session obviously occurred before then. So those two things are what consolidate into the April estimate. Our assumption would have been at that point that we would expend all the general fund and other fund limitation, and that's the situation that we still project. With respect to federal funds then, in March of 2002, we knew that we would obligate all the $27 million in federal funds limitation for specific capital and operations projects. However, we estimated not spending $9.7 million in federal funds limitation by the end of the biennium. This was because of delivery process for vehicles, which take between 11 and 18 months, depending on the size of the vehicle, to actually get delivered, and related work related to getting those vehicles in. So the $9.7 million is what's not spent in the current biennium, but will be spent next biennium as the vehicles come in.
So that means that you have this actually in a column where it's basically shown as being spent since you have already ordered the goods for it.
In terms of our accounting and encumbering and recognizing that it's obligated, yes. And when we work with the federal government, that's the term obligate that we use.
Okay. I think that is very important as we look at this budget. Mr. Sherman, if you're going to have clarification. And I have great respect for the fact that they received an audit that shows corrective action. There's nothing more devastating than coming out of an audit where still some open-ended questions. I just went through that in my own role, and let me tell you, they must have had a great sigh of relief on that one.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Kurt. The last point to be made is on column 7, where it shows the division what's actually spent through January 31st, 2003, and that happens to be pretty close to on track for the expenditure that was estimated in April of 2002. So that's showing almost $31 million expended through January, with an estimate of approximately $35 million by the end of the biennium on June 30. Mr. Chair, that's tracking through the numbers. Sorry it's so complex there. I'm open to any questions.
I still don't understand why the bottom line would... I'm sorry. That's the expenditure. That's it. I'll take care of it. Thank you.
I'm waiting for Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess if I look at your page 55 in your documents, I'm not sure I understand how you're allocating between your source of funds and uses of funds. You're showing us line items in column 6, $8,333,000 funds, would get your total of $35,245,000 is a use of funds total, not a source of funds total.
Let's see. Well, Mr. Chair, the general fund piece, in terms of the amount of general fund coming in, we would expect that by the end of the biennium, we would spend the vast majority of the general fund. Your question is, what's the difference between the estimate as of April of 2002 and the uses of funds that are shown on page 55?
Well, I guess my question, and Mr. Chairman, this is not worthy of taking a lot of time, I don't believe, but I would just point out, it would seem to me that we're talking here as a use of funds, and that total of $35,245,000 is not the $38,102,000.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to take the time with the senator and go through that in more detail after the hearing.
I don't think we need to spend time here working on that.
Thank you. If we have a minute afterwards, I'd love to hit that one.
We have a floor session at 10 o'clock. So
okay.
We'll
make sure we wrap up with that.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, anything else at this point?
Yes, that's it. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you for your time.
The same book.
Good morning. Martin Loring, Administrator, Public Transit Division. There were, Mr. Chair, there were two other questions Tuesday that I would like to briefly address. One of them related to performance measures. Senator Dukes observed quite accurately that the performance measurement information we were providing you wasn't in exactly the same form as it has been presented in the form in which you're used to seeing it in. And apologize for that oversight. In the back of your packet, you should have a landscape or document. I don't believe it. Well, the pages are internally numbered. It's 1 of 11. It should be after all the presentations.
It's in the inside pocket of your...
Oh.
Of your,
probably at the bottom.
Look at that kind of black bar toward the top. This document presents... We do kill a lot of trees.
And I'm just sitting here acting like I know what it's all about because I left mine back in the office.
Oh,
that's okay.
Well, you know all this stuff anyway.
This document lays out all of the performance measures for the department, including those for the Public Transit Division. And it essentially presents them three times or in three different sets of information about them. The first time through, it lists what the measure is and the performance measure number, when it was established, whether it's a new or modified measure, the 2000 value, the year 2005 target. If it relates to a benchmark, that's indicated. And the division that owns that or is responsible for that performance measure is also listed. On page 2 of that document is our first measure. We have three in this document. Under the agency goal to move people and goods efficiently and relating to benchmarks number 58 and 59, we've got the transit annual rides number that I've talked about before. Excuse me. And then further into that document on page 6 lists the various values, 1998, 99, 2000 through 2001, and projected to 2005 for that particular performance measure. And then further yet, on page 9 of 11, It provides some narrative information about the data source for that measure. The next measure tracked in this document for us is on page 4. It's the intercity passenger service goal that we discussed last time. And again, deeper in the document on page 7 of 11, is information about where we have been over time. 66% of communities of 2,500 or more met that goal in 98, 76 in 2000, 90 in 2002, and we hope an outcome of this budget is our ability to get 95% of those 110 communities to that level by 2005. And then, again, further back, on page 10 of 11 is the data source. The third goal for us...
Summer boots.
Sorry.
You surprised me. I know I've lost it, but the percentage of... Okay, down low. Percent of Oregon communities of 2,500 or more with inner-city bus or rail passenger service is 90%?
87%, rounded up to 90, Chair George, Senator Dukes. Yes, this is some explanation needed. And covered briefly in the discussion of our inner-city program, but the Oregon Transportation Commission adopted an inner-city policy that said that Oregon communities of 2,500 or more ought to have, or people who live there, ought to be able to get to and from the next largest market economy for medical service or whatever in the same day. And there are 110 communities in Oregon that are 2,500 in population or more, and of those, 96 currently have that same-day access in some way, shape, or form. It could be Greyhound, it could be Porter Stage, it could be Amtrak Thruway buses, or any of the other inner-city providers.
Okay.
We've made significant progress in that area. We have more progress to make.
In Columbia County, is that COCO? Because COCO really doesn't carry the average person.
Perhaps not the average. Chair George, Senator Dukes, I believe in Columbia County it would be COCO going to Portland.
You can get from clouds come out of Portland, but okay. To me, that would tell me that if COCO is the example you're using in Columbia County, if there are similar examples other places, that perhaps your definition of access may be a little fuzzy. But I'm impressed if that's a reality. If people in those little bitty towns can honestly get from one town to another, can get to the doctor, and because it just... It's not my experience, but you deal with the numbers so and the system, so okay.
The third goal, a performance measure, is found on page 1-person commute goal. But it is the reducing the number of single person on page 3. It's listed as a TDM goal. I'm not sure exactly why. Because of the, I mean, there's one person within the department that whose full-time job it is to promote rideshare and transportation demand management, and that's within the public transit division budget. The experience with that goal, the data, is found on page 6 of 11. It shows that in 98, 29% were commuting during peak hours by means other than a single occupancy vehicle. That's been relatively stable, and our goal was to move that to 30% by 2005. those are the formal performance measures. As I mentioned in my presentation, we do track other performance measures within the division that aren't in the statewide list. A question was also asked about collateral and how we secure the state's interest in vehicles that are financed with grants through the Public Transit Division. Any vehicle that we finance is, of course, titled through our sister division, DMV, and the owner is the agency using it for the most part, and they must list the department on the title as the first lien holder, first security interest holder. In addition, there's a standard condition in all of our grant agreements requiring insurance at least at the level required by ORS Chapter 806, which is actually the requirement that affects us individually. It's a fairly low threshold, 10,000 property damage, 25,000 bodily injury, and 50,000 bodily injury per occasion. And the standard condition also requires the department to be named as an additional insured. The primary benefit of this is if that insurance gets canceled or is changed, we automatically receive notice from the insurance company, and that certificate of insurance is kept in the grant file where we can monitor and make sure that protection is provided.
Martin, that just seems like a very, very low amount of insurance.
Chair George, I agree. I would never personally consider engaging in the kind of commercial uses that our grantees provide with that low a level of coverage. Many of our grantees carry higher limits, and we are actively considering raising that, but that would probably take a rulemaking and a rather involved process. But the chair is absolutely right.
Can the potential liability be limited, or is there any possibility of this doing a deep pockets following? In other words, we provided them to them, they have a massive loss, and the reason I asked that question, in the afternoon I go to Public Safety Ways and Means, and we have some unbelievable charges that are coming out of a lawsuit that occurred with one of the agencies. Is there any potential liability for the...
Chair George... Some of the grantees with whom we work are subject to the same sort of tort limit protection in statute that the state itself enjoys. Others aren't. And as to the issue of liability, I'm not a lawyer, and lawyers get real grumpy when I make guesses in that area. Well said. Is there a potential? Probably, Chair George, but it hasn't occurred yet, and that's another reason to raise the limits, to give us some additional protection.
Representative Hanson.
If we direct the agencies to only use Ford 15-passenger vans, could we shift all the liability to Ford Motor Van?
He's quite creative this morning.
Got a good night's sleep.
Only if we bring those unqualified vehicles out of the school system.
Their pockets deeper than ours.
Yes. Chair George, I'd like to compliment you on the public hearing you held yesterday. You gave a lot of people who wanted to have their voice heard an opportunity to be heard. I think you got some good testimony, and I really say for them how much they appreciate the opportunity to speak. A couple of issues were raised in that hearing that I think merit just a comment or two.
Before he gets off the performance measures, I wanted to go back to
a web page.
Well, let me find it first. Beats me. Okay, page 6.
I got them up. It's okay.
Well, I wasn't sure I was holding up the right page for my...
Okay, well, I'll shuffle all my...
Alternatives to one-person commuting.
Right.
Page 6.
In the front of your notebook.
There we go.
The last one.
The bottom one. In the packet.
In the
What would it take to improve that number?
In the pocket. At the bottom.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, the short answer is money, but not a lot of it.
And
I think Senator Starr, I believe, is working on a bill, Senate Bill 775, which I think is scheduled for a hearing in Senate Transportation on April 1st, that would focus efforts statewide on transportation demand management. That's an array of strategies to work with people to voluntarily reduce the number of signal occupancy trips by either shifting them to off-peak times or using a lot of the strategies, telecommuting to avoid a trip that you don't need to take, or carpooling, vanpooling, riding transit. There's a lot of potential to reduce congestion during peak hours, reduce air pollution, reduce fuel consumption, save energy, through voluntary measures that each of us can take.
Okay, and I guess maybe I'm pointed at the wrong one. Number of people who use other than automobiles was somewhere around 30%, was it?
Right, 29 now.
30 was your goal.
30.
And that's what I'm interested in. What would it take to raise that 30%? Number of folks who are on buses or trains or...
Chair George, whatever. Senator Dukes, the key issues in the studies I've read suggest that the key things are putting information in people's hands that they need to make informed choices about how they're going to get where they need to go, and then help with those who are susceptible to motivate them to actually put their beliefs into practice by changing what they're doing maybe a couple trips a week. The studies we suggest, you know, there's about a third of the public that wouldn't ride transit if their life depended on it. Fine, leave them alone. It's their right. There's about a third who might be interested or susceptible, but the system, the bus line or whatever, just doesn't exist to serve them. Well, there's probably not a lot they can do. And there's about a third that either use transit or carpooling or what have you, and are interested in doing that, but they lack the information and or motivation to put those beliefs into practice. And we've found that targeted marketing can do wonders in this area, and there's some examples around the state that where local folks have done a lot of good work. Our role has mostly been cheerleading that effort. We hope to do more of that, and I think Senator Starr's bill would focus a few more resources in trying to get that marketing, trying to help people make the right choices. To
what would it take to get in deeper into that third, and I mean, say, get it from 30% up to 35-40%, can we get that high? I think it's I was reminded again recently because I have a son here during spring break, and the school has extended spring break a couple more days, and I thought, well, but I can't drive him home in the middle of the week. I'll be darned, we've got a bus. Well, I don't know. We used to have a bus. I don't know if it's we still have a bus. That goes from Salem all the way out to Astoria. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about it in a couple of years, so maybe we don't still have it. And so somebody's going to drive him. And I would have loved to have put both he and his older brother on the bus and sent him home from Salem. But I would have to make two or three phone calls to find out whether that was even available. I haven't heard anything about it. Now, granted, I don't get home all that often. But I just, it seems to me that what you're talking about, making the information more readily available by repeating it to folks. I think too often we lose services because we don't let people know they're there, so they don't use them, and then so therefore we don't need them. What would it take? I mean,
Chair George,
could we
Senator
get
Dukes.
It up to 40?
Yes.
Okay, so there are people
exactly.
out there you think who would be willing to do that if we had the, I mean, who would ride if we had the information and let them know it was available.
Yes, and it's key. Like many things, this is something about which reasonable people can differ. When I talk to some of my friends at TriMet, they say there's plenty of information. And they're right. But it's not always in the form. Chair George talked about the easy-to-use,
yeah.
plan-the-trip sort of thing.
That's right. I hear that.
They're doing some of that. But I know, I mean, I'm supposed to be an expert. When I take out a bus schedule or an Amtrak schedule, it takes me an embarrassing long period of time to find exactly what I want out of it and figure it out.
I'm trying to determine if you're fishing legally in any portion of any Oregon stream.
I just want to have a phone number on it, because that means that there's somebody someplace for whom it's not as difficult as it is for me.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, I'm convinced that we can move the numbers with prudent additional investments over time, but exactly how much to do what is unfortunately beyond my knowledge. I probably should know that, but don't.
Well, no, I'm hoping that your division is looking at that sort of thing.
That
I think
we are.
Often we say we've got this much federal money coming, therefore we will do this much service. And I'd like us to be proactive in saying we think we can do this much service, so let's go pester the feds and see if we can get more.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, we aspire to do a lot more than you've empowered us to do.
Okay, good.
We're going to go to Senator Carter in just a minute, but is the Sandy experiment still building? I mean,
Chair George.
They just skyrocketed their numbers when they pulled out of TriMet, and I was just wondering if that's continuing or if they've maxed out and what kind of numbers they're looking at.
Chair George, I can get those numbers for you. I don't have detailed numbers. They are continuing to increase. As is often the case with a startup, the initial rate of increase was very dramatic.
Right.
As they mature, it will flatten out. But they're doing a good job for the people of Sandy.
Well, they were expecting to plateau, but, I mean, it was like 9 months. They went up 700% or something like that. And the main thing they were doing was getting that thing that was always going to be required. You've got to get me from where I am to where I want to go conveniently and affordably. And they seemed to have kind of hit it on the key, and I was hoping we were tracking them, because I thought that was if they were able to continue the momentum, like, you know, they're going to peak eventually, because you're going to hit those people who are not going to ride it. But if you could get us information on how they're doing, that would be very informative. Senator Carter, excuse me for going ahead of you.
Oh, no, that's okay. Along the same line, I know I chaired a task force to try that, and we were dealing with youth fairs and with elderly.
Mm-hmm.
As an aside, anecdotally, many of the people between 35 up, you ask them about riding public transportation during peak times, and most of them, because now we don't have school buses anymore, and kids in high school and junior high school ride buses, and the kids are so disrespectful and are so aggressive, many adults don't want to ride the public transportation system during those peak times because of that reason. And it's going to be very hard to get many of them out of their car unless they're, and I know you can't police everything, but somewhere along the line, I'm not kidding you, the way young people act on our bus system, our public transportation system today, it discourages many people from riding public transportation because they're pretty obnoxious.
Senator Carter, you know this is a bad sign we're getting older, because it was a few years ago they were saying that about us.
So I don't know how we get more people out of the cars during peak time, especially when people work hours between 7 and about, 8:30 and less the time the kids are going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Chair George, Senator Carter, I know a lot of attention is being spent on safety and security to deal with some of these issues. I'd also plea, if you hear up in Portland, that my sixth grade grandson who takes TriMet to school is one of those kids, please let me know so I can deal with it.
Because of that, I bet he isn't a problem.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krieger.
I got here a little bit late to excuse me, but this conversation about people using things. We're in D.C., my wife and I. We've never been on a subway. We got the red line, the green line, the blue line, and we're looking at this big chart, and these people by the thousands are going by, and I feel dumb as a stump because I've been here reading these instructions for 10 minutes. I still haven't figured it out. This little black gal walks up to me. She says, "Sir, can I help you? You appear not to understand this."
That's putting it mildly.
And she took my money in here, and she asked me what I wanted to do. She started pushing buttons, and I couldn't keep up. Pretty soon I had these tickets, and it did get me to and from.
Yeah.
I think some people are maybe a little intimidated with the process, that they've never done it, and they don't do it frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And because they don't do it frequently enough, Well, I'll take the car. I don't want to put up with it.
Well, particularly, and we had that discussion yesterday, and the issue is always going to be in Oregon, bus shelters. I mean, you cannot have people standing there driving the rain with the wind blowing and have them come back and ride that thing tomorrow. There's not going to be. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may be a little off the point, but I think I can hook it back. In all modes of transportation, the way our citizens respond in the value of courtesy becomes incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
I think both when I drove for TriMet for about a year and a half during the 80s, and then when I had my plumbing business, it was pretty much I served the whole region. I did a lot of contractual stuff that put me all over the metro region. There was really different, you could see different traffic patterns and different levels of courtesy in different parts of the region. For some reason, I always felt Washington County drivers were much more courteous. Now I live on Hayden Island, and I can spend a lot of time on I-5, a lot more time than I ever hoped to. But it seemed to me if the public, both maybe in the courtesy on, you know, if we were teaching courtesy or encouraging people to almost serve as volunteer hosts to help the strangers on the road, if we were teaching that if you maintain some type of distance between cars so that traffic could get in and out of the high occupancy lanes, instead of having to obstruct traffic to force their way in, traffic would flow a lot smoother. And when you've got, I've wondered in terms of the expensive lane new cement and stuff, if we could teach people how to drive and how to perform, which for some reason in different parts of the metro area, people drive differently. And I think and certainly even cities have different contrasts between San Francisco and Portland, and that we could really improve capacity if we really focused on changing values. And it sounds like it's an almost impossible task, but yet through an intense public relations campaign during the 80s, we dramatically changed the recycling rates in the area because we developed that. Not at the same time that we were developing capacity in the system, we were also changing people's values and on how they dealt with things. I think we've done that in a major change of how people think about drinking and driving has occurred. There's evidence that if you really focus on some value-driven messages, the people respond to it. And I think we could, and it doesn't sound like a transportation function, but I think it's the way that we could get a better usage out of our system, whether it's conduct. Anyway, just throwing it out as an idea that maybe at some point we'll develop.
Senator Morris.
Mr. Chairman, could we go back to numbers?
Let's go back to numbers, yeah. We're stuck on philosophy.
Before we leave, I sense we're coming to the close here. Again, looking at page 55 of your presentation, I have a question with respect to public transportation planning, nearly $1 million. But yet there's a one FTE position out of 14 in the public transit division. Could you offer some insights as to what is going on with $1 million?
Chair George, Senator Morris, the answer is yes. Most of that money is passed through to six urban areas that are required to do multimodal planning to qualify not only for transportation funds through the Federal Transit Administration, but road money through the Federal Highway Administration as well. Both the Federal Transit Administration and the Federal Highway Administration provide funds for planning in these urban areas. Those areas are, there are three, well, there's one urban area over a million. That's the Portland metro area. There are two areas called transportation management areas that are over 200,000 in population but less than a million. That would be Salem and the Eugene area. They're pretty much on their own. The state doesn't have any involvement. The money comes directly to them. Then there are small urban areas like your own area, Senator Morse, Corvallis, Bend, and Medford that are above 50,000 population but less than 200,000. The planning program, which is one of the programs I didn't get to the other day, is one person. We get a source of state of federal funds that pay the salary of that person. We get another source of federal planning funds called Section 5303 funds, relates to the section of the law. All of that money is passed through to those six urban areas for the multimodal planning they are required to do to be eligible for the tens of millions of dollars in transportation assistance available through the federal government.
Thank you.
Before we get away from that, I'm participating in that planning effort that's coming through transit, and of course, probably every section of the budget is going to have something like that that's going out to locals to help do it. But one of the things that's so frustrating, and we heard that from people that we're losing off of the committee that's looking at the issue, and that is, hey, been there, done that. What happens? You get a great report, and somebody puts it in a corner, and it's gone because there are no dollars that, in fact, would flow out to make anything that you plan to do work. Is there any thought about setting up maybe a lottery system that if, in fact, you come up with a plan that you might have a possibility of moving the shelters and additional reorganization and stuff like that? Because I just get this terrible feeling that we're just doing the same thing that was done 10 years ago and 20 years ago without any possibility of actually putting feet under it. And I know we're never going to get that $118 million away from 11 entities to get out some of the smaller communities. But there needs to be some way that we could at least have, for example, we had testimony yesterday that in 1999 we got a few more dollars into senior and disabled, and boom, we just saw things happen. And that's kind of my thought is how do we get past dumping $1 million out here for planning only to have it gather dust in the corner someplace? Is there anything you could think about or be thinking about that we might actually be able to help a few, and I think it would have to be by a lottery system, to actually have some money to move some ideas?
Chair George, I have two thoughts in that area. One is this is an opportune moment. As I mentioned, Bend and Corvallis are now small urban areas. They used to be some of the largest recipients of the non-urban general public transit money that we administer, the $11 million that we talked about earlier. Corvallis, their grant level was about $143,000 a year. We've got about $150,000 grant to Bend. We've got about $150,000 grant to Wilsonville. We've got about $130,000 or $140,000 grant to Medford. Because of increases in population in the 2000 census, none of those areas are eligible to receive those funds anymore. And so that you sweep them all together, that's about $600,000 within the current level of resource that will be reallocated among eligible recipients. So if the group that you're working with in Yamhill County gets its act together and has a plan that they can implement, there is more federal grant money that we can invest in that in the next year or so than has historically been the case. The other thing that I wanted to say about that is we've worked with a lot of agencies. Some that try to provide public transportation with only grant funds that they could hustle from year to year, and others that invest locally. Mm-hmm. I don't have to tell you which succeed.
Yeah.
The ones that have a reasonable level of local investment as a base they can count on year after year after year can then go after grants to supplement and build and have a successful enterprise. Those that rely on the state or the federal government to provide 100% of the cost of the things they need come and go.
It's not really transit, and I apologize for that, but I wanted to follow up on something that Representative Hansen was saying because I thought it was a worthwhile point, and although Troy isn't here, somebody would make note of it. And as what he was talking about, training people sort of back in the basics of how you drive and using that as a way of making people more courteous. And that's we give them a break. We do other kinds of of things to try to train motorists. I have a son who is learning to drive, and I'm teaching him by the book. I mean, he's going to learn, you know, follow the speed limit and leave the distances and all those kinds of things, which means he's going to be at the end of the line when he gets out on the road. But he's learning all of that, and he can now drive I-5 in Washington State over by Longview, and we'll eventually get him to I-5 in Portland. And then after he has his license, because I spend a fair amount of time up around Seattle to come, I will take him up and teach him to drive in the Seattle traffic. Which is a whole nother, Everett's rolling his eyes, a whole nother experience. But I think he needs to learn all of those different strategies, the safe way to drive in those kinds of situations. But I have constituents who won't go to Portland because of the traffic. Mm-hmm. They will go to Longview, and they will shop there. And that's a shame. So I think that the effort that he was talking about is worthwhile, and I know that we have federal grant monies that would allow us to make that effort. And I just wanted to back that up and say that we should do that, because I think we're losing opportunities. Those of us who are on the road all the time get used to that. I do think you need to learn to drive in all of it. I've driven in a number of different countries on this planet that other people say, why would, you know, they would be scared to death to do it. But when you're exposed to it all, you learn. But having learned it, you don't want to drive in it every day either, so... It would be nice if we could back some of that down, and I think we could.
We were moving right along. We were trying to get to
rail to ask questions.
very briefly, in the hearing yesterday, Senator Morris asked a question about connections between adult centers and transit. The chair asked about accessible school buses. Both of these questions touch on something that's very important to us. It's called the State Agency Transportation Coordination Initiative, in which we've been engaged for several years. ODOT Director Bruce Warner and seven other state agency directors have been meeting periodically to see how, by collaborative action, we could improve the efficiency and effectiveness of transportation dollars spent. And we've made some progress in that area. This initiative was initially chaired by Gary Weeks. When he left state service, the torch passed to Bob Rapine at the Department of Housing and Community Services. After Director Warner was appointed, he was tapped to provide the leadership and has ever since. That effort is jointly staffed by people from the Public Transit Division and the Department of Human Services Director's Office. Not new staff, but existing staff kind of dragged away from prior assignments. We've got two major efforts underway so far. The first is working closely with the Department of Human Services to help them move from a fee-for-service model to a brokerage model in allocating what they call medically necessary but not emergency rides to their clients. This takes a lot of federal Medicare dollars every year for that agency. Under the fee-for-service model, it's the individual caseworker who arranges that ride. And because of the federal rules and some other requirements, that practice tends to push up the average cost of those rides. Under a brokerage model, you have a professional who signs up different providers. They set their own prices, and then as the calls or the rides are approved by the agency, the broker then allocates that ride to the lowest cost provider that can meet the need. Has potential, perhaps not to save money in a dollars and cents way, but to get a lot more bang out of every buck spent. The other major area in which we're engaged is that pupil transportation study that Jacqueline Zimmer mentioned. I guess what I have to say is what Paul Harvey used to talk about, the rest of the story. She said it's a study being done by Al Shannon. Al did run pupil transportation for the Department of Education before he retired, the job that Deborah Lincoln does now. He now works for the Oregon School Boards Association. They, the Department of Human Services, and the Department of Education and ODOT are implementing this pupil transportation study that is being funded by ODOT through the Public Transit Division to look at barriers and opportunities between pupil and public transportation. We're confident that there won't be a magic bullet, a simple answer that, you know, all of them do this and we'll save millions. But we're equally confident that we will discover lots of little tested practices that improve efficiency and effectiveness. And as part of that study that was scheduled to end in about February of 2004, we anticipate implementing a number of pilot projects to demonstrate the effectiveness of these techniques. And we've got some local jurisdictions that are way ahead of us. Getting calls from the mayor of Bend and the superintendent of schools in Bend that want to merge their systems. Well, hold off. We're not ready to race out of the gate quite yet, but we're looking at those opportunities, and we'll be exploring, you know, a lot of small, prudent steps that will increase efficiency, or at least try to. And you're talking about big money. I mean, the dollars that we propose to spend in this budget, $45 million, that's big money to me. But if you want to know how much the state will spend on yellow buses, multiply by about 8.
Right.
It's a crude number, but that's in that ballpark. Needed services, but by looking at a lot of little things, we can be more efficient. We looked at other things too: insurance, safety, trying to reduce and streamline regulations, a bunch of things. One thing that I can't get out of here without mentioning is the budget note that was in the 2001-03 budget. Ways and Means directed the department to convene a stakeholders group to review the division's rules and improve state oversight of the Special Transportation Fund program. This is the major state source of grant funding that benefits transportation for the elderly and disabled. We pulled together a group and we began to put together rules, but were advised by the Department of Justice that we didn't have the legal authority to proceed as requested. The note also required us to do a report on performance measures and other things. We've drafted that report, submitted it to Legislative Fiscal, and I believe you have a copy of it. And then the follow-up on the authority issue is that Representative Betsy Johnson drafted a bill, House Bill 3522, to put us to the test by giving us the legal authority to improve state oversight of that program. And that's had a hearing in House Transportation, and we'll be going to Ways and Means. So you may well see it, Chair George.
Okay. Any further questions?
I'd just like to conclude by thanking you for the opportunity and expressing my sincere hope that you'll approve the budget and substantially the performance.
Well, I just went back and looked at this just a second ago to realize the special payments was 94% of your budget. So.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Sorry to take so much time.
Oh, I don't think that was your fault. That was ours. Thanks for being information, too. Okay. Yes. Are we headed to Claudia?
No, Lori.
Oh, Lori. Oh, Lori's going to... Oh, great. Lori's going to run through. Thank you. This is the right place. I mixed it up.
Just got my stuff here. I'm sure it's not any other...
Good morning, Chair George, members of the subcommittee. I'm Lori Byerly from the Department of Administrative Services, Budget Management Division. And in front of you, there should be a gray packet that says Oregon Department of Transportation Rail Division. This is an overview that you should be becoming very familiar with in terms of its format. If you'll turn to page 2, you'll see a chart that kind of gives you a budget comparison for the division over time. You'll see the change from the 2001-03 through 5th special session number to the governor's budget for the division overall is about a 37.6% increase. A large portion of this is due to phase-in of costs for South Metro. On Tuesday, we heard some testimony about the South Metro commuter rail project. About $15 million in expenditures have been put into the budget to accommodate payout on that project. That number could be adjusted as we finalize what portion of that project was paid out during the 0305 biennium, since the timeline has changed since it was developed earlier in the biennium. The rail division is responsible for providing a safe and efficient, reliable rail system in the state. It manages passenger rail planning and development, freight rail planning, rail infrastructure improvements, crossing safety improvements. The governor's budget continues to support two trains per day round trip between Eugene and Portland. This costs about $8 to $9 million a biennium through contract with Amtrak. That contract can be variable based on contract changes on an annual basis. Reductions in the budget over the 2003 biennium did include a drop of general fund of about $5 million, which was backfilled with other funds. One position was abolished as a result of Special Session 3 actions, a vacant planner position in the division, and that position was also continued, well, not continued, but abolished for the 03-05 budget. If you'd like to take a look on page 3, you'll see how the department spends its dollars by funding source category. Largest proportion of the budget is from other funds. A portion of this is federal as other funds that comes in. It consists of fee revenue, transportation operating fund revenue, federal dollars that come in for crossing safety work. There's also a portion of lottery revenue bonds related to the South Metro Commuter Rail project. Those dollars, although they are lottery bonds that are sold, come into the department as other funds and are expended that way through special payments to Washington County. The federal fund portion, 40%, $23 million. These are dollars that come from the federal government. They're project-specific funds for high-speed rail corridor projects and freight projects that come from the Federal Railroad Administration. You'll see expenditures of 9%, 5.1% general fund. Basically, this general fund is supporting one train per day between Eugene and Portland. That's what the remaining general fund in the budget is used to support. We'll take a look on page...
Go ahead. I'll just ask Claudia when we get a little bit further. And I just sparked a question in my mind.
So take a look on page 4. You'll see, like I said earlier, the governor's budget is a 37.6% increase from the 2001 legislative budget to the fifth special budget. Something I'd like to comment on is we discussed earlier with public transit, there's been some confusion about, you know, what we look at in terms of points and time with numbers. The reason we use this legislatively approved budget through fifth special session as a comparison point for the 0305 budget was because we wanted to be able to compare what had happened to agencies over the course of the biennium. Typically, we want to use a legislatively adopted number. But we wanted to be able to show where agencies had taken reductions, in this case, in the general fund, and show the other fund backfill as we make comparisons between what had happened during 0103 and 0305.
Senator Dukes. Tell me if this is asking too much, if it's too much of a work burden. But could we get through the sixth special session? I mean, we whack some more out of the budget, and I just try to get a more realistic feel.
Actually, Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, in this program, we added an other fund component to backfill from a previous reduction of general funds on the rail program, and we took no other reductions.
But even some of that is more helpful. To tell me where we are today, and then there's the 0305. I try to get this, but I'm talking not just about rail. I'm talking about all of them, and I don't want to. You've got enough to do. I don't want to add a lot more work.
I can give that to you.
Okay, great.
I already have that calculation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dukes, Secure George. And thank you, Susie, for providing that information. It's information we have, but it's not compiled in a form to give.
Yeah,
you.
No, we have it. As I'm sure when this was printed, we hadn't even done this stuff yet.
There was no sixth special session yet.
No, the seventh one is in May, isn't it?
That's what I was just saying.
George, members of the subcommittee, back on page 4, like I said previously, it does use other funds to offset general fund reductions. The budget also supports an agency rent pilot. We discussed this with another program area earlier, and special train service. It also adds resources to improve financial management efforts in the division.
Lori, I underlined that when I first saw it. Explain to me what we're going to be doing. Have we had a problem we're trying to correct, or are we just the fact we're handling more money?
Chair George, members of the subcommittee, that's actually a policy package, and I'll talk about that. We'll get to that if that works.
Okay.
Thanks. On page 5, you'll see how the division spends its money by budget category. About 7% of the budget is in personal services. If you had noted back on page 2, the division has 28 positions supporting with those dollars. Services and supplies of about $7 million, and then the majority is special payments. Payments going out for contracts and for project payouts on rail projects and service throughout the state. If you take a look on page 6, kind of starting with how we built the 2003-05 governor's budget. We started with what the division had adopted, close of session figure for 2001-03, $43 million total funds. The only change to that figure through the fifth special session was a reduction in general fund for intercity rail connections, $520,000, but this was shifted to other funds from other federal intercity bus funds, so that service was not discontinued. The budget also includes some base budget adjustments for position actions and compensation changes that will be adjusted once we have revised figures for those costs in 0305. On page 7, essential packages, package 010 provides some funding related to temporaries, overtime, and mass transit tax. Package 020, program adjustments. The first portion of this package phased out some dollars for short line rail expenditures. There was a 2001-03 package that had used lottery bond revenues to fund some short line financial assistance. It was about $2 million, so that is no longer occurring in 03-05, so those dollars were phased out. That limitation's gone. It also included the phase-in for South Metro Commuter Rail that I mentioned of $15 million. And the division has also requested some additional technical adjustments beyond what's in governor's budget. The first would match the agency central service assessments with actual expenditures, about $76,000. The second would, for rail crossing projects, align project expenditures with available federal revenue. The division has better information about what those federal dollars are going to look like. They'd like to pull that revenue in and then show that expenditure limitation to accommodate those revenue figures. It also would add $200,000 in carry forward for the Amtrak Brooklyn Yard project. This was a project that was approved at the October 2002 Emergency Board. $1.4 million in limitation was approved for track and signal improvements at the Brooklyn Yard in Portland. There's additional expenditures that will take place in 0305, and that $200,000 would accommodate that expenditure need. Package 030 includes provisions for adjustments for inflation and state government service charges, about $556,000. Page 8, moving on to policy packages. And the first package for the division is package 081, which is actions related to the 2002 third special session. As I mentioned earlier, we did eliminate one general fund position, a rail planner position, and that position's continued to be eliminated for 0305. Package 091 relates to actions taken during the 2002 fifth special session. This is a net zero package because it's a fund shift between general fund and other funds. This takes the $4.2 million in general fund away that supports one daily round-trip train and replaces that with other funds. Now, the department has requested this adjustment was made in a special payments budget category. They'd like to shift a portion of this adjustment to personal services to take some general fund off positions and use some of the other fund dollars there. It doesn't change the overall nature of the package. It just shifts the dollars between budget categories. Package 092 is an additional program reduction package. Because the department had available revenue in the Transportation Operating Fund, we made a shift of another $750,000 general fund to other funds in order to maximize the use of other funds' revenue and free up general fund. Package 187, the Mill Creek Building Rent Pilot, is a net zero package. It implements the rail division's portion of the pilot. Rent payments of $58,000 are included in line items now in service and supplies, and some other line items are reduced to offset that. This project would help provide a more stable funding source for maintaining the Mill Creek facility. It's over a department-wide type of initiative. On page 9, package 424, category shift error correction, and this is a net zero package. This again relates to the way we've budgeted some expenditures by category. $5.3 million in expenditures are currently in capital outlay, but that's not really where those expenditures need to be. They need to be in services and supplies, so the shift between the two expenditure areas. Package 425 relates to a commemorative, the Lewis and Clark celebration train. This would be in commemoration of Lewis and Clark expedition. There's a lot of statewide activities going on over the next 3 years in support of this project. This package would add $1.1 million in limitation to help subsidize excursion train service between Portland and Astoria. This item was brought forward to the Emergency Board in January, and at that time, the department received limitation of $387,000 related to Transportation Operating Fund dollars to buy the cars to support the train. They did not receive limitations to subsidize the operation. The January Emergency Board action also said that if those train cars eventually get sold or are leased, those dollars should be paid back to the department and had that funding restored. The subsidy was not approved. And I believe the department is going to work with the involved entities to try and secure revenue from other sources to help subsidize operations of that train. After 2002 six special session actions, there is no longer even enough transportation operating fund revenue available to support the package. So unless we find another revenue source, or think there's going to be one, there probably isn't a way to really implement the package. Just to give you an indication of the difference in timing between when we prepared governor's budget and where we're at now, at governor's budget preparation, there was about $2.6 million anticipated for ending balance in transportation operating fund. After six special session actions, we're down to about a $700,000 amount. So that's 2001-03 ending balance, beginning balance for 03-05. So that number was dropped significantly and does not allow for, probably allow for the funding in this package.
Senator Dukes.
So now we own the trains, but we can't run them?
Senator Dukes, Chair George, I would let Friday respond to that, if you don't mind.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, what the commitment is right now, and I'm primarily from Representative Johnson, is that we are engaging in fundraising, not we ODOT, but the people who are wanting this train service are engaged in...
I don't think it gets up to the $1 million mark.
We're also exploring advertising, selling advertising, any kind of revenue generation. I will say that at one point, because we are actually going to have a contract with Amtrak, we need to be the conduit for these funds so Amtrak doesn't have multiple contracts with like LCBO and other groups. So at some point we probably will need limitation, but from revenues that are coming from outside.
Moving out for those 2-3 years if we don't have a train. Any point in trying to get on the highway because the highway won't get you anywhere.
Claudia, I have a note. We need to have you enter your name for the record. It's my fault. I was best listening to this one. After that.
I'm Claudia Howells. I manage the rail division for the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Chair George, members of the subcommittee, just one last comment on the package and the limitation issue. It is a possibility if we do think there will be revenues coming in from other sources that we could leave a limitation in the budget, unschedule it, or provide a mechanism for it to be used if needed. But I just wanted to be clear that there's not enough transportation operating fund to support the package as we had originally intended.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that was discussed in the emergency board that we, you know, that the department would be coming forward for a limitation to accept donations and other funds for operating this train.
Package 420 is related to the financial management actions I mentioned earlier. This would have one fiscal analyst, two positions for dedicated budgeting and financial management. I don't believe this is really to address a problem, but this division, like public transit division, does not have a dedicated budget person as many of the other divisions in the department does. And I think from our discussions around transit in this area as well, there's a lot of money coming in from different sources for different purposes, and I think the department's trying to provide a better mechanism for tracking that and being able to accommodate for all those funds and expenditures.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dukes.
Just so you know, you'll probably hear more from me on that rail situation.
Right.
I have part of Washington County in my district, and I support commuter rail, and I support all of the rail stuff that we have done in the more urban areas. But in a situation where it is literally going to be impossible to get to here from here to there, I find it interesting that the state says because you're in a rural area, it's not as important. So you'll hear more.
Well,
this
is a major celebration, world recognized worldwide, I understand. So well, we better be prepared to deal with it.
Anybody who tried to come to Astoria when the Missouri was there only got the shot over the bow. I mean, it's nothing compared to what we're already seeing and what we will continue to see. And so, I mean, your infrastructure will break down and will not. You'll put far more money into trying to repair Highway 30 than you would ever put into this. If we make them all drive on the road, and then you will put more money into personnel to be out there trying to explain to them, because there are no detours around this. There's no other way to get there. So you'll put a lot of money into personnel, as we did with the Missouri. Most of ODOT's personnel in Astoria were out there trying to direct traffic and repair potholes. So this is an option.
Yes, it is. Well, not only that, but I actually have a vision for what happens if it when we're through with it. So.
Ah. Well, what do you mean through with it?
Well, <yeah. laughs> we're going to run if we don't intend to let go of it.
Claudia, we're going to need to head out of here because we have to go to a floor session that's going to start in a few minutes. So we will resume later. So everybody kind of adjust their schedules based on our time. Without any further comments or questions, we will be adjourned.